Everyone, we are back. Welcome to No Direction Beyond, episode 3. I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Perrin. I'm joined by
Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
And I'm James. I write Code Switch.
Excellent. When getting ready for a role-playing game, we know it is often an excuse to play with some serious nerdy toys. Miniatures, cards, scenery, dice, maps, and software, we want it all. But while there are mountains of material for traditional fantasy gaming, when it comes to sci-fi, we often need to look a little deeper. So join us tonight as we explore the options to bring the very best toys to your table. Now, guys, so, you like
what
toys?
What do you want to start with?
Well, okay.
I mean, I enjoy toys. I've got my favorite dude up here. Let me see if I can pull him out. I've ever told you the story of this guy. It's this great alien model from the, what is this, Wrath of the Righteous? Yeah, Wrath of the Righteous. He's cool. Favorite toy.
No, never heard the story about why that particular alien is the awesome.
Can you see?
Ooh, it's signed.
I got it signed by Eric Mona.
Did he kill a character with it?
No, actually, I have ran out of paper to get him to sign something the first time I met him, and I wanted him to sign something, and I said, hey, Eric, the only reason I know who you are is because you used to do all the Pathfinder Battles things, so here's a marker, sign my miniature. And he was like, well, that's not the strangest thing that anyone's ever asked me to sign, so I'll do it.
I wonder now, what is the strangest thing Eric Mona has been asked to sign?
Have you ever heard the story about how he signed my laptop case?
No.
Okay, so, I mean, I kind of gave away the punchline, so I'm sorry, everybody. But I guess a laptop case does kind of count as an accessory, so we'll go with it. My first PaizoCon, I went to the store, I had $50 burning a hole in my pocket, because I was an irresponsible young man. And I went up to Eric Mona, who was sitting at, like, a signing table, and I said, Eric Mona, want to do a challenge for me? And he said, sure. I said, well, I have $50 in my pocket to spend. Name one thing that in the store for me to buy, because I don't know what to buy, but you have to pick something that I don't already own. And if it is less than $50, I will buy it on the spot. And if it is more than $50, I won't buy it. I'll put it back and I'll get something else, but you'll probably won't get all of my money. And he said, interesting. And I was like, all right, so go ahead. And so he like looks at the racks of Pathfinder Battles minis and he goes, I can only get one. There's not a mini that's expensive. Because at the time they didn't have those big case incentives.
Right.
And so then he goes and looks over at like the core rule books. He's like, a core rule book is about $50, but you probably have all of those. And so he looks over and he's like, all right, I want you to go to that case. And this laptop bag is sitting there. And he said, I want you to go and grab it and tell me how much that's worth, because that's what I'm picking. So I walk over, I grab the laptop case, I open it up, and there's a price tag inside. And I'm like, I yell to him, are you sure this is what you want? And he's like, yep. And so I go over to the register and I pay for it, because it's less than $50. And so I bring it over, and Eric Mona gives me this big grin and says, so how much was the laptop case? Did you end up getting it? And I said, yeah, Eric, I bought it. And he's like, well, how much money did I make? And I said, well, you got some of my money. And I go reach to my pocket and I pull out a coin and I drop it on the table. It's a nickel. I was like, this is all you missed. It was $49.95. And so for his overwhelming victory, Eric Mona also signed my laptop case. It says, may you always roll natural 20s, Eric Mona. As James Ballard can tell you, that has never come true ever.
No, it's only when you're GMing.
Yeah, that's right. It does. Oh my gosh. Maybe his curse applies only when I GM.
Well, I'm going to eat your dice.
He is, you know, he is responsible for, you know, a tremendous amount of Pathfinder Society deaths. So, it's
fitting. Oh, dude, no. We actually, it's not related to our topic, so I apologize, listeners. But James and I just finished Eyes of the Ten. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we can totally see, because he writes the first one in that series. And all. Oh, man. Oh, man. Just nothing else. Oh, man.
All right.
Now, yeah, just play it.
Now, Starfinder aside, just like sort of to help frame this up, to get what when you're playing any sort of role playing game like Pathfinder, Star Wars, Savage Worlds, whatever have you, what sort of accessories do you like to use? Like, what are you comfortable bringing to the table? What are your go to's?
I'm talking a lot tonight. Do you want to answer this one first, James?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't usually bring a lot. I just bring whatever I'm running, like either on a tablet format or printed out, and a map and some markers. It's just traveling, carrying stuff ain't great. Yeah. I do have a cool binder. I don't have it on me that I keep all my pawns in, like trading cards. But besides that, it's just maps and stuff. When I move up to a place with more space where I can host, I've been thinking about making like actual terrain. So I'll be excited for that.
Oh, you should wait. You should show those because those are really cool. Show one of them.
Oh, actually, I have just a little. I'm going to knock down everything on top of my desk here. But this is what a completed one from Hirsch Miniatures. They do silicone molds that you can put stuff in. They recommend dental putty, dental plaster. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can use plaster pairs like I was doing just to be cheap and just to try it out. But they also offer sci-fi molds, too, which was cool.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of the Hearst molds ever since they started attending Gen Cons. And they always have, like, one of the coolest tables down there because it's just this giant aisle of, like, hand-painted, completely 3D terrain and these molds. And it totally instills the confidence that, you know, maybe I can do that. And, of course, you just showed us that you actually can.
Yeah, and I'm like a monkey with two left hands. Like, it's really easy. Like, the parts all come out pretty well. After a first or second casting, you figure out what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So, when I get a bigger space, maybe, like, the space Param has behind him.
Yeah. I mean, like, that brings up a really good point. I think what you bring to a game largely depends on, like, whether you're hosting and whether or not you actually need to carry that stuff. Like, when I used to have people over my place to run our home games, the things that I would put on the table and use very much, much more than what I would bring to, like, a Pathfinder Society event. Like, if I'm going to Pathfinder Society, I try to have whatever flip maps they have listed, and I always bring a couple blank ones for custom mats. This is mostly because I am extremely lazy and not very confident in my ability to draw terrain. So I would much rather just put it down and be like, this is what you see. Yeah. Don't make me draw it. And, like, you know, I had a group of friends who were like, oh, I love drawing. Drawing is fine. I'm like, you know what? Like, I used to love drawing too. But then I became a publisher and a blogger, and I started doing all these things, and I had no more time. And the ability to just drop a flip mat down is amazing. Like, you don't even realize how much time it saves you until you do it. It's great.
And it always has that little aha reveal moment when, like, your players realize that, oh, no, he came prepared. And you go, whoosh.
Yeah. Whoosh. Yeah. I mean, it does come with the downside that there are a lot of flip mats that Paizo makes that just are out of print now, especially ones that are, like, commonly used. At least for me, the big one is the Darklands flip mat. I really, like, Steven, if you're listening to this, please, I'm begging you, Pathfinder flip mats, classic Darklands, please. I don't care if it's not pretty. Yeah, like, just please.
This is not a good
confirmation
time.
Begged you.
It's not a good time to mention I accidentally bought two of those.
What?
Yeah, I was going through my collection. I'm like, oh, here's Darklands. And Darklands again? Every now and then I end up with accidental doubles.
Wait, I have a double of the City Gates one. Do you have that one?
Yes.
I will swap you. Oh, damn it.
Alex, you've got nothing Pathfinder I want unless it happens to be a gold foiled signed core rulebook.
No, that poor flip map. It's just sitting in Param's place, and it needs a home in my bookshelf. I will find something to swap
you. We'll figure this out, Alex. Don't worry.
When I do, I will come onto this show with Param's flip map triumphantly in my hands, John Carter style.
Now, on the flip side of the flip maps, also, I do like to have the pre-printed maps, especially when I'm going to society, because I'm representing all of Pathfinder when I show up to a society. Like, I'm supposed to be, like, I hate to say it, but, like, I'd really like to impress my home games. But when I'm, like, representing at a con, or when we're hosting our local PFS event, and I'm there as, like, the official venture officer role, I have to bring my A game. So I also do the scaling, like, when there aren't print maps, I like to do the scaling up of the maps in the PDFs. And there's a really great website that I don't think a lot of people know about, is that if you just scale up those maps, they kind of look all blurry, like when you scale up any image. There's a website that does a really great job, and I'm about to make James giggle when I say this. I don't know if James giggles, but at least laughs.
Yeah. I do. It's like the cat in and what's it called? The one goes.
Anyway, it does a great upscaling rhythm, especially for drawn and animated material. It's called Waifu 2X.
Oh, I know what that's for. Oh man, I mean, you got to get your pillow somewhere.
But it's really great for scaling up those Paizo maps and making them look clean and clear and crisp, because it's meant to upscale cells from cartoons and anime and stuff like that. So, and it does a great job. It does a really great job, actually. I've used it for work, and I won't ever admit that.
Don't, especially if it shows up in your browser history. Just get rid of that.
Man, I really hope that no one from your Skulls and Shackles group listens to this podcast, Wink.
No, they're all idiots. I also kill them every week. So, you know, they'll be smart when they learn not to make a party without an arcane caster for 9 levels.
Listen. Yeah, it's true.
And so you can scale those up, print them to scale, and then cut them out and put them on, like, foam core or poster board, or just leave them out as, like, cut out the individual rooms and leave them as tiles and just lay the rooms down one at a time. That also will help save you. And for things like Pathfinder Society, or if you're running the APs where you have access to the PDFs. For all of this advice, you have to have access to the PDFs of these documents. It just makes your life so much easier that all that work's done for you. Otherwise, you end up in, like, a campaign cartographer hand-making your own maps and digital software, which I know Luis Loza on the network loves to do as he's continuing to learn the mapping software. And I've made more than my fair share in campaign cartographer and Dungeony and Photoshop maps, battle maps. It's kind of fun and relaxing, but that takes a lot of time, and I don't have a lot of time anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, the tile parts of maps, I think, is the best part, and I think that works best with APs. As far as society, using Flipmats, I only want to use on, like, theater. If they could never use Hill Country again, I'd be very happy. But I like drawing maps because people don't know where doors are anyway, and by drawing it and telling them that, I avoid that. I walk through this rock.
Is it considered a spoiler if I spoil a boon that appeared this year?
Where?
It was a Gen Con boon.
Oh, is it the one where you pick the thing and then, yeah, I know. Yeah, no, you should spoil that because it's really funny.
Okay, so on the subject that you're talking about, the Darklands keeps appearing and the Hill Country map keeps appearing, it's become such a trend in Pathfinder Society that they put a boon out this year at Gen Con, which is, I think I've been here before, which gives you a bonus if you can recognize the map that you're playing on from a previous scenario that character has played on. Yeah, that was hilarious and clever and awesome, and also kind of points out the fact that we do kind of reuse the same ones. Like, how many times have I reused that Waterfront Tavern? The Waterfront Tavern has been reprinted 3 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, like, now there's a nighttime and a daytime version of the same place in Flip Maps.
As long as they avoid making a Hill Country for Starfinder, I'll be happy. Like, the Red Rock that they have now is pretty good. The canteen is nice. They put that you can use it in one of the scenarios, 02 or 03. And the flip top mat is a good one because you get the hexes, and the only other hex ones I have are those big Chessex ones.
Yeah. And let's go ahead and talk about some of the map options then. I had this actually saved for the, like, dead last for the episodes. So, like, getting maps for Starfinder is going to be cool. You can, of course, because Starfinder has planets, you can reuse most of the flip maps that aren't obviously castles, because unless you happen to be landing on a planet full of castles, which was like 1/3 of Next Generation episodes, so I guess that's valid.
Yeah, Space Germany.
There's the official, all the Iron Gods maps are also really good. They use those a lot in the early PFS scenarios because, you know, that they Paizo only has so many space-themed stuff, and of course they were going to use them. Especially at the launch of the game. And then there is the Cantina, there is the basic terrain, which is different from the basic flip map for Pathfinder because it has, like, a ground rocky texture on one side and, like, these 1-inch metal grates on the other side. I actually don't know. I've been on the fence on using that one. I've still been just using the traditional basic flip maps when I need a generic-y map to grab. Mm-hmm. But that might just be my habit. And then there is the Hex Starfield map that for the Starship battles. It's worth noting that that map in particular has sold out like hardcore, and it's really hard to get now. Because everybody needed a Hex map, and not everybody had a Hex map, and so there happened to be one, so why not grab it?
Did any other big system use Hexes a lot?
HeroClix uses it, right?
No, HeroClix uses a square map. BattleTech uses Hexes. A lot of space combat games used Hexes. GURPS, the GURPS role-playing system, uses Hexes. Especially before the rise of and dominance of the D20 system, back when 3.0 came out, there was like a good selection of Hex-based gaming. Hero System, I believe, also used Hexes as its main map. And there's sort of an appeal, like a lot of Hex purists, because they believe that it helps more accurately map movement. And there was even official rules for using Hexes in 3.0 and 3.5 that were printed in the books as an alternative if you didn't want to use the square maps. But that's a lot of older stuff. And you can definitely find those old BattleTech maps. They're not old anymore. They still print the game, so they're still printed. You can find those all over the place. And another one that's sort of been making the rounds that I've been using is Milton Bradley put out a game called Battleship Galaxies a few years back. And it's a little cult hit. It was supposed to be like the start of like their own little hobby grade. It was Hasbro. It was supposed to be like their start of their own little hobby grade game branded Battleship with like expansions and stuff, but it never got the expansions and stuff. But that one thing has this really sweet looking 1-inch hex or 1.2, the right size. It's the right size hexes on like a full on fold out, full quality board. And it also comes with like 20 spaceships that are like expertly hand painted and look really swanky.
Wow!
How much does that
cost?
You can find it usually the box set of the game itself. You can usually find it between 30 and 50, depending on the time of day. It's been trending upwards since Starfinder players figured out this thing existed online. Before this, I was a big fan of this game, and I played the crap out of it. Me and Dave Gross were constantly trying to put together a pickup game of it, but we never could get together. It's a really fun game all on its own, so I definitely recommend you try it out and play it. It's cool. And it's all, like, anime-themed, too. I mean, it's got this weird Star Blazers / Robotech vibe to it, because you have your
just,
one...
Just keep adding on the stuff that James wants.
Why are you... Just keep smearing it. Param.
It's really sweet. I totally recommend getting it. There's also a bunch of third-party people that have stepped up to the plate. John Brazier Enterprise. Go ahead.
John Brazier Enterprise did one, I was going to say, right? I remember seeing him putting out a lot of really cool like planetscapes and whatnot. Isn't there another company that does Limperium?
Yes, there's two companies right now that are real big in the field. There's John Brazier Enterprises. They have their Star Battles line of Hex space maps, which have like really cool backgrounds. You've got your stars and your galaxies and your nebulas and stuff in the background that you expect, but they also have some that have like a space station in the background and like the huge Mass Effect type curvature of a planet in the background and all the cool things you want to see when you have your space opera going. You want to be shooting out on. They're sold out through DriveThruRPG, I believe, mostly as a PDF product. But I don't know if they're also available. Yes, they are available as a print-on-demand posters for only $10 a piece. That's actually pretty nice.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
So do you know what I want? That's going to sound really silly. I want someone to make a hex grid that's designed like so that it's a little bit bigger than a normal flip mat, and it's got like corners so that you could slide the hex grid on top of an existing map. Because like at least when I think of Star Wars.
I've got the thing for you, Alex. It's on my list.
No, what is this? Stop trying to take our money.
Arknight Games. I was going to talk about this when we got to miniatures, because they make really cool miniatures, and I will get back to it when we do. we need to talk about these guys. They make some awesome stuff. I've brought them up on the show before on No Direction Prime. But Arknight makes a lot of clear templates and stuff, and one of the things they make is like these giant clear plastic sheets of map grids, and you can get them in hexes, you can get them in squares, you can get them in dots. Like they've thought about all the permutations, and it's just these clear sheets that you can just put onto any textured surface or map, and it puts your grid on it. So like you can map out your maps or get any sort of floor plan or battle map you want that doesn't have a grid on it. You slap one of these on it, and it's a battle grid. Plus, it's this plastic material, this really clear plastic sheets that is friendly to dry erase markers, wet erase markers, and stuff, so you can draw right on them.
Oh, man, that's cool. I want shiny wet erase markers. Like, give me silver. I just want a silver wet erase marker. Do I don't care about those? Anything else. Just give me that. No.
Oh, that'd be cool. I want those, too.
Surprising, right?
It might be a hard thing about like wet erasing the metallic shavings that have to be in any silver metallic.
We sent a man to the moon 40 years ago, and we can't figure out metallic shavings on a wet erase marker.
I mean, we've done a lot of really bad stuff within the past year alone, let alone the past 40 years.
That is just my default response to we can't do something, is we sent a man to the moon 40 years ago.
Yeah.
This is also worth noting that we filmed this show live in front of a live Twitch audience. If you are watching this show and you have any questions for us, pop up in chat. We're reading it throughout the show. We'll get your questions and answer them as we can. Also, chat's been really, really, really active today. I like that. Good going, chat!
Yeah. Hey, so... Let's talk. Are we gonna keep on the maps, or can we switch to my absolute favorite accessory for any role playing game?
There's one more map I have to call out because of just how awesome it is.
Call out the maps.
The maps.
Call it out.
Maps of Mastery. This is Christopher West's imprint. He does a lot of cartography. I know that he does it for freelance. His work's appeared in a lot of products that you might have seen. But he also does his own maps and sells them. You usually see him at Gen Con. He loves to do sci-fi maps. So there's a ton of really great-looking sci-fi maps on this site. So you can get in either PDF or printed on either tiles or poster. And they're all dry erase friendly. And one of the maps he does, besides a lot of them are just sci-fi, but one he does that's really cool is called the Distant Outpost series, which is two sets of four maps called the Orbital Docking Station, and then like a set of map tiles that go on top of that, that map out this massive space station, like in 1-to-1 scale, that it would basically take four of these tables behind me to hold the whole thing if you were to lay it out. And then all the tiles are on it, and you can go up and down the different levels and go inside the different rooms. And so there's a set of the tiles that's just the damaged set, so it's all blowed up when you're having fights in it. And then he also has matching tiles for corridors and spaceships and docks and stuff. So I definitely recommend checking his stuff out over at the Maps of Mastery store with dashes. Okay, the address is really convoluted. Just search for Maps of Mastery on Google and you'll find his stuff. It's really cool looking. Now, what was you wanting to call out as your favorite?
Miniatures, Param.
I love
miniatures.
Minis!
I mean, there's so much stuff to talk about when it comes to miniatures. Man, oh man, where do we want to start? Do we want to start with, like, the thing that's less of us bantering and more of us talking a bit about news?
Well, we better get to that, because I bet a lot of people have been expecting us to get into this one.
But before we do, it's worth saying that we... while we do have, like, official statements, this is a totally biased podcast.
Yeah, we are a totally biased podcast. Yeah, we're a group of fanboys, but that doesn't mean we don't have opinions. And sometimes,
it's true.
But we've talked before about the Ninja Division having the official Starfinder rights to make the official Starfinder miniatures. We've had them on the show of No Direction before KD Beyond launched. To show off some of those. They showed off the core iconic sets and the spaceships, and they're going to be coming in pre-painted and unpainted variants. We saw some of those at Gen Con. Well, they launched a Kickstarter for the rest of the line, which surprised a lot of us. But I guess I should be less surprised seeing Kickstarters. I think that that is just going to be a thing from now on in this hobby space. And the Kickstarter itself is interesting. It's a little bit on the expensive side, or I was going to say a lot on the expensive side, but I did the math on it, and it's actually about $2 a mini on average. So it's not a lot on the expensive side. It's just a bit on the expensive side compared to, like, we're used to the Bones Kickstarters where you're getting, like, a quarter a mini at some of the bit higher tiers.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth noting that, like, Ninja Division's quality, for what it's worth, is higher than Bones. Like, the Bones are really nice looking and, you know, they're really durable, but, I mean, man, those... I've seen some of the Ninja Division minis up close, and it's like, they are...
Yeah.
They intimidate me as a painter.
They are fantastic miniatures with nice, large, curved pieces meant to just, like, invite shading. They do a lot of chibi miniatures and anime-inspired miniatures under the... Like, the... It gets real fuzzy when you're talking about the corporate structure of Ninja Division and their relationship to Soda Pop miniatures. Ninja Division is over Soda Pop, but it's sort of like an Alphabet Google thing where Alphabet was created. Anyway, that's corporate stuff that I'm not super qualified to be talking about. But yeah. But when you hear Ninja Division, you should also think the Soda Pop, the Super Dungeon Explorer lines, the Alien vs. Predator lines, some of those miniature lines. But that, because it was a Kickstarter from Ninja Division, that meant it instantly became controversial in a way that it wasn't. And the reason being is that Ninja Division is currently has had 4 separate Kickstarters going back as many as 3 years ago, and going on 4 years. And of those 4 Kickstarters that they have hosted over the last 4 years, none of those have completed and delivered. And a couple of them are more than a year late on deliverables. There's also been a lot of complaints about their communication about these Kickstarters. And every single time a promotion for the Paizo Kickstarter has been put up, it has been immediately flooded with negative comments about Ninja Division's failure to deliver on their existing Kickstarter obligations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now
it's okay. I mean, well, we should probably finish with what we know before we comment. So I apologize. Yeah. But I'll totally read the one of the statements that we got just to
say. Do you want to have the Paizo statement or the Ninja Division statement?
It doesn't matter to me. Which one do you want?
The Ninja Division statement is 20 pages long. So
Well,
I've only have an extra
statement, right?
yeah.
Okay. Well, Paizo's statement is, Paizo is excited to work with Ninja Division on their line of premium quality Starfinder miniatures, and we're confident that they'll deliver these products in the time frame specified in the Kickstarter.
Okay.
It's a pretty straightforward, confident response, you know?
Right. If they weren't going to pull away from this relationship in the wake of this negativity, that's sort of the response you expect from any corporate entity of, like, they also directed us to talk to Ninja Division if we had any further contact. We reached out to Paizo for official comment. We also reached out to Ninja Division for official comment. They both replied back with, Paizo replied with that statement, and Ninja Division replied by pointing us to a recent blog post that they have put out regarding this. It's a very long, involved blog post that basically they attempt to own up to the fact that they are behind and that communication was bad. They're sort of trying to eat some crow on this one. They lined out the map of when they are going to start their deliverables again, which the Wave 1 of Super Dungeon Explorer, the oldest one, let me pull up the exact date on that. But they're expecting to have that out September. Okay, sorry, that September is when they expect to get it shipped out from them. Production of Wave 1 begins in November 2017, and it should be on their doorsteps by April of next year is when they're currently saying for the oldest of their existing Kickstarter obligations. And included in this blog, I guess this is kind of sums up a lot of what they're trying to get across, is communication on our Kickstarters for the past few months has been poor, with projects is delayed and not enough clarity from us. We take full responsibility and offer no excuses. It deeply saddens everyone here that our relationship with our fans has been so thoroughly damaged. We love what we do, we love the games we make, we love the worlds we build, and you are the reason we get to keep doing it. We need to be more open with you. We need to work harder for you. From this point forward, we intend to make that happen until there is a giant box of chibi miniatures sitting on your doorstep and beyond. And I'm not going to hit them too hard for stealing their tagline.
You know, like, I have a lot of thoughts on this statement, and most of them are sympathetic, just because, like, as someone who has done two Kickstarters now myself, like, when life happens and things are late and timetables get pushed back, you kind of don't really want to pop onto Kickstarter's blog and have that be the message that you type to your fans, like, that month. Like, oh man, these guys have been waiting 4 weeks to hear from me. Do I really want to tell them that this bad thing has happened and it's going to negatively affect them? And, like, the answer should be yes, speaking from experience, but it's really hard to do that. And if you're not ready to be the person, the bearer of bad news, essentially, you might want to try to hold off, and you might get that message from, I don't know, your partner who is working on the art, and they're like, oh, I just need another couple weeks to get this done, and then a couple weeks turns into 2 months, and oh man, I haven't posted in 3 months now. Well, they've already waiting for me. Better keep waiting. Like, it grows really out of control quickly.
But this sounds like exactly the thing we tell freelancers not to do with their publishers.
Yeah, but it is super hard when you're the publisher and, well, when you're a publishing company, but you're basically the freelancer and your backers are the publisher, if that makes sense. Like, it can be difficult, especially when you are the person who is used to having that authority and that power, and then to see that things happen. Like, I remember not too long ago, I had a freelance artist does amazing work, and literally the day after he signed my contract, his wife, you know, had her kid like 2 weeks early, or no, it was a month early, and you know, like, stuff happens, and when you're an individual, I think it's easier to say, look, I need more time. But when you're the company and, like, you're trying to manage other people, it can be harder to admit, like, these other people need more time and be the person to say that, you know, on behalf of somebody else. I don't know. Like, I'm just speaking from experience for what I have had happen to me, because that sort of thought cycle happened to me during the Grimoire Lost Souls Kickstarter, where, like, there was a couple months where I didn't say anything because I was still waiting for artists, and I was, like, waiting to get things put together. We were this close to having everything ready to show them and be super cool and exciting, but, man, that this close could turn into this close, and then turn into this close, and then turn into this close, and I kind of feel them from this statement. That's kind of the vibe I get from it.
Yeah, I mean, I can feel the vibe. Now, if this was one Kickstarter they were behind on, I'd be a lot more sympathetic. I'd be a lot more in your camp. And also, I have to say, you know, No Direction participated in the Kickstarter where two of the deliverables were very late, and it was a constant, like, I was aware of all the difficulties, and it was a constant embarrassment. We were constantly, we constantly hated that we were so late on that project, and owning up when we made those statements, when we had to come out and say, hey, we're late again, here's what's going on, is hard. But it's still, we still had a failure there. We should have done better. We could have done better. Things happen, and I am sympathetic. But at the same time, you know, there's a balance between leeway and failure to deliver on any of these things. So And you know, I've had delays on my own projects. I've not had delays on other projects. It's all hard, but that's all reality of working in this business, is that this business is hard.
That's true. So why don't we let their flaws and failings just go, and let's talk about the minis in their Kickstarter, because that looks like it's going to be our Starfinder line soon.
Well, it's a lot of it is art from the Starfinder core rulebook, and it looks like a lot of it is also going to be art from based on art from the Alien Archive. We've seen the Iconics before. We've seen the spaceships before, so there's not much exciting to show off there because we've already previewed it on the show. They also have, like, one of the bonuses I'm pledging in is all of the legacy races, which I know a lot of people are excited about. And then, of course, there's tons of the other hero races that basically it's the same stuff you would see in the pawn set, except for in miniature form.
Oh man, though, but like there's so many spoilers for Alien Archive. It got me super excited. Like, there's a weird half monkey race called the Markoi in it, and I was like, oh, look at those weird monkey guys. I wonder how they're going to be different from Venaris. Or, oh man, look at those weird guys that, like, they have lower halves of bugs, but they're clearly not Drider. Look at those cool guys. Oh man, look, Space Drow. I knew it. Space Drow. I mean, it got me really excited. What did you think, James?
I mean, some of the miniatures are just kind of, I'm a guy with a gun and armor. Mm-hmm. They do some, I think, really cool ones, but especially with the legacy of the gnomes. They use it looks at least like they were going for the Bleach Gnome. And I think it's cool that they have Vesk and Kasatha and a couple different models of those.
And they
those
don't are kind look of your like ones. Iguanas.
No, they don't look like your iguana-head adventure captain.
Worst. So bad. Oh, man, but the only thing that breaks... Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was about to say, it's just so bad. But the models are actually pretty... I mean, from what they've shown from the screens, they look pretty cool.
Yeah. The only thing that breaks my heart about it is there's a mini in there that's like a Kickstarter exclusive, and like it's only if you pledge. And I'm kind of against those just on principle. First of all, it is the space version of Scylla, Pathfinder's iconic paladin, which I feel like should not be a limited promotional mini. In one part, because at least looking at the lineup we get, it's going to be one of our very few like ethnically diverse minis in the set. It's that one in the half elf. And on the other hand, it's freaking Scylla. You can't make her exclusive. What are you doing? She's the iconic paladin. Every Pathfinder player knows her. You're going to like say, oh, if you didn't pledge like 50... I hate it when World of Warcraft does exclusives. I hate it when just about everybody does exclusives like Pokemon Go. And now I hate it here in Ninja Division. Just stop. You're wasting your development time making something that a fraction of your total audience is ever going to use. Just make it available and make it a cool part of your Kickstarter. I have strong feelings about that.
That's what happens. Really, you usually just have strong offer feelings. It later.
Wow.
They usually offer it later. I mean, also, get that Scylla out of here. She lay on hands doesn't work in 0G.
I beg to differ, sir.
You're cheating to make it work, in which you made one of the most successful third-party products for Star, helped make one of the most successful third-party Starfinder products.
This is a biased podcast.
Yeah, totally biased.
It's an incredibly biased podcast. No, not only that, not only does Lay on Hands work in 0G, but Lay on Hands thrives in 0G.
I don't believe that. Also, how disappointed are you that they use the Isoki Bounty Hunter art as the template for the Isoki Bounty Hunter unlocked?
Did they actually show the picture?
Yes.
They showed the picture, but not the model. There's no model render.
Then I can have hope. As long as that model does not get rendered with those proportions, things will be fine. Because all the other Yusoki in the thing use like the mechanics proportions. Like, there's one that's a little bit smaller. Like, he looks more like a mouse than an actual like rat folk like the other ones. But that's okay. Like, they can have physical diversity. They just can't have heads that look like turnips and legs that look like toothpicks.
It's for getting under the engine better.
No, your head would get stuck.
Not if all your cupboards are turnip spaced. You're just not thinking well.
Yeah, no, I, man, there's three pieces of Yusoki art in that book that I don't like. It's the Bounty Hunter, it's the one, and the two for the Yusoki race page, because they all have that same style of giant head and little arms and legs. Oh.
Now, there's no denying that the quality of these minis are top-notch. Soda Pop and Ninja Division have been making amazing-looking sculpts since the company's been around. I mean, there's a reason that they're featured so heavily in Cool Mini or Not. And they run that contest, and they're always a huge booth at Gen Con. But it is a little bit on the pricier side, but not too bad. But like, even I can't get super positive or send out a super positive message behind this. I can understand why a lot of our audience might be hesitant to pledge it on this with the history and the controversy surrounding it. I will certainly buy a lot of these off of shelves because they look amazing. But where this would have been an automatic pledge in at the top amount, I'm still on the fence on how much or if I'm going to pledge in on this.
Yeah, I can hear that.
I mean, on principle, I don't give to Kickstarters. It's give me something, and then if you do early access, I can buy into that, but I'm not going to throw money at something that I don't know.
You know, hey, don't have a taste of. Then maybe if you don't want these miniatures, you could talk about the other miniature option for Starfinder.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
love puns.
Let's talk about what's available right now. Okay,
I thought we were talking about Infinity Minis. Okay, never mind.
Oh. I was talking about...
We're talking about puns. Right,
what were you guys talking about?
He was going to talk about Infinity Minis, and I have a big list of options. But the official pawns are the other obvious option. Do we all have the pawn set?
No, I only have them in my heart of hearts right here. So you go ahead and find them, and I'll talk about pawns, because pawns are great. If you don't know what pawns are, you're missing out. They're basically sheets of cardboard that you punch out, and then you stick them in these cool little... Yeah, like those that James are holding right there. And you stick them in these cool little bases that have like little ridges to hold them. And so they're great because, A, they are really cheap compared to, you know, three-dimensional miniature models. And let's face it, if you're going to throw an NPC down on the board who's just going to get shot by a plasma cannon next round and die, do you really need an expensive mini? Yeah, look at that Tyrannosaurus. He's just waiting to get shot by a plasma cannon. And then when he does, James can just chuck him like that and not feel bad that he spent $6 on a mini when that pawn is probably, like, what, 50 cents?
Yeah, like that. I just threw them across the room. They're fine.
Yeah, and it's great. You can be rough with them. You can chuck them at your players. If you ever need to thwack someone in the head enough to remind them that they're being a jerk, but you don't want to do any real lethal damage, bang! It'll be great. And for those of you who are listening to this, I made sound effects and hit myself on the head as if I had thrown a pawn at myself.
Can we actually throw a pawn at you?
If you figured out how portal guns work, then yes.
I didn't say we'd hit successfully.
In October.
So, basically, the core pawn set is going to have most of the art from the Pathfinder core rulebook as pawns. It probably means that if you buy the pawn set, you're going to have giant headed Yosoki. Oh, no, it's going to happen. Just take those and find a nice fireplace to keep them.
Come on, man. Some people might want giant head rat people.
I mean, those people are wrong. It's okay. We never claim to be an unbiased podcast. Anyway, so you have a great selection of characters to use as NPCs in this one because it's mostly player-focused. Mm-hmm. I imagine that when Alien Archive comes out in like 3 weeks, then there's probably going to be a nice monster selection pawns to go with that because, let's face it, we're all going to need space invaders. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like the old arcade Atari game. I mean like literal space invaders.
It has a few. It has basically every piece of art that appeared in the core rulebook. So it has multiples of all of the iconics, all of the examples in the classes, the legacy races. Basically anything that appeared as a quarter page character shot throughout the core rulebook shows up. Some that didn't. It also has a lot of like a few aliens that you can use. And it has all the starships that are in the book are in there, too. So that's probably one of the bigger surprises.
James says no. With the starship ones, they, at least from what I've seen, have not announced any hex-shaped pawns, like bases.
I asked them. They said, remember, they said they weren't going to do that. Right. I don't know why.
I know, well, but I...
You don't need them. The hex-shaped bases aren't necessary. The circles fit completely within the hex. They don't go over the edges.
Fit completely unless you have players that are jumping around a table or do not know where their body is and they knock something and then you lose a facing.
This is
James
true.
Got you. He's
but experienced. Wouldn't they just still lose the facing if they knock the hex base away around too?
If it goes into a quarter turn versus a if it goes less than a full turn, you can make it out better when it's a hex, because I've had regular hex flat bases, like wood ones, and I can tell where they got knocked off. With the circle, it's harder for me to figure out where it was originally. You could theoretically just glue the circle ones onto a hex one, but I don't need you to give me more arts and crafts projects. I just need something that works.
Now,
I mean, like, they made multicolor ones. How hard could it be to make a set of hexes that you could buy?
Pretty. I like them.
A lot harder. It's a lot easier to put dye in the plastic when it's still gray than it is to remake the entire mold set.
Make a new mold, Parham. Make them do it.
Yeah, Parham, do it.
Do it. Come on, Mister. I built my own house.
Come on, RPG Dad, do it.
I can build my own set of hexes anytime I want. Hot glue ain't expensive, and it only takes a second to put a pond base onto one of the pre-cut wooden hex bases if I wanted to go that far. But it's like. It's nothing.
Come on, chat. You need to help us peer pressure Parham into doing it.
Yeah, Parham.
Do it.
I'm not going to be able to fly to China to custom make their mold bases so that Paizo has a pipeline to put colored hex bases for their pawn sets.
You can make your own in your basement out of scrap, just like Iron Man did with his robot.
Yeah, come on. You're Tony Stark, aren't you?
I don't have a Jarvis. Does anybody want to volunteer from this cat podcast to constantly speak in my ear snarkily with a British accent?
I thought the guy who you brought on Paint Night was your Jarvis.
Oh,
he never appeared on screen. He was just a voice. He might be a robot for all we know.
And if you want it to be useless, you can just set Siri to British.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but then
all right, we've got two people in chat that are peer pressuring you now. Come on, chat, you can do it. I believe in you.
That's twice our current number, so we're doing good.
Yeah, we've doubled our ranks.
All right,
We're only 26 away from being a troop.
Moving on from the official bases, there are also another company that does really great sci-fi pawns, which is the company I talked about earlier, Arknight. They actually focus mostly
Arknight does
on
everything.
Yeah, they focus mostly on pawn miniatures, and the way they do it is they print it on those plastic so that you can actually see through most of it. So it looks really cool. More like a real miniature. I don't like their bases as much as I like the official Pathfinder bases, so often when I do use their stuff, I just put their stuff in a Pathfinder base. But it's a little bit more expensive than the Pathfinder pawns, but like I'm talking a few cents a mini, not multiple dollars. But they look, I hate to say it, they look better. They don't have war artwork. Like, the artwork is really good, but not like of the quality that Paizo artists have, but because of that clear see-through, they look better on the table. And they also, yeah. they don't print the front on both sides. They actually do the art for the back of a mini, which doesn't matter in Starfinder or Pathfinder because there's not facing unless you're in a starship. And they don't have starship minis. They have a set called The Last Parsec, which they're selling for $100 for 240-some miniatures, or miniature pawns. Wow. And then they have an upcoming set from their recent Kickstarter that was successful called Spacefarers, and they've got some preview art of that up, so I have no doubt it's going to look as good as the rest of their stuff. They also have templates for Pathfinder, as well as 3.5 and Savage Worlds and GURPS and anything else you can imagine. But they do have like the right colored, the right shaped templates for your spell effects and area effects. And they can come in like, you can order them in fire or lightning or prismatic, kind of like the clear spell templates that Wizards of the Coast used to give out as tournament rewards all the time. Those, they look like those, sure. And they're really cool.
Yeah, I can make your own
out. I wiped those out at Eyes of the Ten.
They were really useful, except that we have a human-like slide ruler that plays with us, so we don't need that.
Yeah, Robin, Robin is just too good at templates. Like, literally, I bought the my Arknight templates because I came to the realization that if I ever played at a table where Robin wasn't there, that I would be unable to use any spell that required any shape. Because literally, you just say, oh, I want to cast this spell. Let me figure out the dimensions. And she's like on the table.
Yeah, what's a 20-foot template? Thank you. You're the best.
Like, she, like, literally the only way Robin could be better is if she got, like, hologram projectors installed in her eyes and she could just beam her knowledge onto the table. That's like, that is, it's like Arknight, our friend Robin, holograph projector eyes. Like, that's the only possible upgrade.
Yeah, and making your own pods actually isn't too hard. Like, I made one for a summoner from Pathfinder. Damn, it's just you, you know, get some good grade plastic, print out something, and use some nice rubber cement. Mm-hmm.
Yep. If you That's print a nice out... pod. I'm really glad you made, the new one.
And if it's less quality than James's solution, but most printers can print 110-pound cardstock by default if you just tell it in advance you're doing it. And if you have a duplex printer or you don't mind flipping the page, you can pretty much replicate a sheet of any of the official Pazopon set. And Arknight also sells their stuff in PDFs as well as the actual official plastic. So any of these pawns, if you want to DIY them yourself, do it. And well, that's another of the advantages, the reasons I subscribe to the pawns is so that I also get the PDFs. So that when I see that the bestiary has 4 copies of the Flying Monkey and the adventure has 8 of them, I can go ahead and print 4 extra monkeys.
Yay!
Yay!
Yeah, also, for ship minis, I have found at least one bit. If you've ever, you ever played the game Halo, you like the first-person shooter? Mm-hmm. I know you have an Alex. So they made a Halo Fleet board game, or like X-Wing-style game. The capital ships are too big for the game scale, but the regular frigates are about the same size. The only downside is the board game itself is about 110, but UNSC ships are beautiful. It's rare for some reason. I don't think they made a lot of copies.
I've got the exact opposite solution for that.
You have something that's for free?
No, but it's $9 for 144 spaceships.
That is almost basically the opposite. Tell me more.
Okay, so this has been tossed around a lot on all the Starfinder boards. But if you go search Amazon.com for spaceship assortment of 1.5-inch plastic, or just type spaceships, you will find a pack that has 144 little plastic spaceships that are bundled together, kind of like an Army Man plastic kind of quality. They're the right scale for the game. They're the ones that they used in the Gen Con demo from when Starfinder was announced that we took a lot of pictures of, if you want to see them. Also, what they are they're actually a mix of two things. Some old Army Man's spaceship toys from ages ago mixed in with some they reused the molds for some old from the 80s and 90s board games that used these spaceships in them. But of course, you know, the molds of toys when they're past their prime get passed down to cheaper and cheaper toy companies until you can buy 144 of them for $8.
That's actually pretty sweet.
They're garish collared as is, but they do come in an assortment of colors of all the different shapes.
Prime them.
Yeah, they show 6 shapes on the Amazon page, but there are actually an additional 6 shapes that they don't show that are included in the bag. And they take primer really well. They paint really well. If you look at the Amazon page, there's like pictures of people who have repainted them, and they look nice. And it's cheap and a mountain of spaceships. So, go yay.
Yeah.
I see no problem with this purchase. Drown in spaceships, viewers. Drown in all of them.
Don't open your mouth. You'll choke.
Yeah.
No, that's what the word drown is for.
Yeah,
I already gave them the hazard.
Mm-hmm. No, drowning is choking with water.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jane,
if they melt, then it would be drowning.
Melted G.I. Joes taste awful.
We should ask Ryan for his comment on that. I bet if anyone knows what a melted G.I. Joe tastes like, it's got to be Costello.
Now, James, I've shut you down a couple of times as you tried to talk about this, so tell us about your miniature solution.
You haven't shut me down, it's just we've been talking about a lot of stuff. So there's a tabletop war game called Infinity, which is like a sci-fi, like near future tabletop game. It's pretty fun. I'm bad at it, but I know people that are very good at it. They do a pretty wide line of humanoid miniatures. There's like 8 armies between like humans, mutants, and everything. So, like, that's kind of been my go-to. Like, what is this? For my Envoy, I use one of their models. They're garish enough to kind of matter.
You should probably... Oh, yeah, that helped.
There we go. And they look human enough that you can model them, and you don't have to worry about too much fantasy gubbins. And the downside is they're very highly detailed. They have a lot of little details to paint in, and they are a little on the pricier side. Like, that one was about $15. Kind of like on the GW model of this is an important unit, so it costs more. But it's a pretty good solution for most of your like base humanoid races.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's definitely a solution I would like to go to for like player characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a good option. And somebody turned me onto it when I was looking for a miniature that looked as much like Hatsune Miku as I could get, and that was kind of it.
It looks like it's dead on. Now... Of course, the other options exist out there. Warhammer 40K minis are obviously good fits.
If you just want a muscle man filled with muscles on top of his muscles.
I was thinking more of the Imperial Guard. Like, we get slaughtered by the thousands just because somebody rolled above a 2.
really, we just ran out of ammo. There was just too many of them.
Well, that is the winning strategy for Imperial Guard.
Yeah, I've heard some changes in that meta where it's just dudes and cannons. It's like, oh, these poor guys.
and War Machine is good, too, for some of it, if you don't mind some steampunk aesthetic for your fantasy stuff. Hero Forge, the build-your-own miniature, has sci-fi options. It's not
anywhere... disappointingly low.
Yeah, it's not anywhere near as diverse. I've noticed that a lot of the sci-fi characters that get spit out and shared around all kind of look the same in the end. But it's an option. And like I said, we're kind of beggars can't be choosers too much when it comes to sci-fi gaming material. You can find the old Star Wars Wizards of the Coast miniature line. They're the perfect size, the perfect minis to use for stuff like this. But the problem is because it's Star Wars and collectible and out of print for more than 10 years, the prices on even like the common minis there fluctuate wildly. Stormtroopers, just general stormtroopers can go, and like keep in mind, you would get like dozens of these per box, you know, that you opened of this stuff. But even stormtroopers go for like $10. So, ouch.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Hero clicks miniatures are the right scale. You just have to snap them off their base, and I just made a whole bunch of collectors cry. Rebase them is because their bases are 1.5 inches by default. And if you don't mind the base sticking over, you don't have to do that. But those are, especially if you buy the commons, like the not rares, which you can usually get like in giant bins for real cheap off of sites, because it's basically like buying the common cards from any different card game you want. They paint up really well. They're a good option.
That is pretty cool.
Another option I want to point out too, because this is kind of, I wish James was here to hear this one, but the BattleTech minis, they recently re-released a lot of those in what is called the Assault. Let me make sure I've got it right. I have them here. Alpha Strike. Their Alpha Strike box sets have a lot of their molds of BattleTech. These are like $10 a box, and you get 4 pretty decent looking mechs. These are the right scale to be humanoid sized robots and stuff. So if you need some robots for cheap, this is cool. And if you also play BattleTech, you get double for your money. Of course, if you pick some of the more recognizable ones, like Owen Casey Stevens did when he did this exact same thing, which is where I got the idea, he put like a madcap down to kill some of his players in a SFS scenario. And I was like, wait, what? They will recognize if you put a madcap down.
But what if that's what you want?
This is true. And of course, I mentioned bringing mech into Starfinder, and that's controversial, so we have to be careful.
Yeah, that's true.
And goodness, I'm out of any sort of mini recommendations you can make.
No, I know nothing about Starfinder miniatures. I am very much in the audience for this particular one. It's a very strange feeling, mm-hmm. being the audience stand-in. But yeah, so I'm actually scrolling through some of the Infinity Minis right now, and they are pretty crazy to look at, just like what James is saying.
Infinity has been a fantastic set for miniatures. I've always really loved their sculpts and stuff. The game is... I don't like the game as much, but I know it's got its fans. It's a skirmish game that has a history of taking a long time to play, because there's a lot of character choice options during the course of playing that game. And anytime you have a whole lot of options and reactions, that does slow down. It's why Pathfinder combats take 45 minutes to complete for even a simple fight.
That's fair. But, I mean, you know, you don't need to like how the game plays in order to pick up one of these sick minis and drop it on the table as your awesome PC.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, let me look here. Yep, okay. So the last thing to talk about accessory-wise, I think, is the rest of the official accessories that have been released, besides the miniatures, pawns, and maps that we've already talked about. There is, of course...
Oh, you mean like the condition cards?
I want to wait for James to come back for the condition cards.
Yeah, he really does want to talk about those condition cards.
So let's talk about the Game Master screen. It is really nice. I kind of wish they would have gone with the landscape format, but I know that Paizo has been like against doing landscape official landscape screens, so you know, you get what you get. But first, the art on this one was drawn just for this piece, as opposed to the three different Pathfinder ones, which are just reusing the iconic arts from all the iconic characters. And it's this sweet, huge space battle where all the iconics are fighting a giant space worm. And just putting that out and spreading it across in front of the players, is it really sells the fantasy of what Starfinder is. And on the flip side, it has... all the references you would expect, the conditions, the skill checks, etc., etc. And it also has a nice little cheat sheet on the inside for the starship combat, which helps make life easier there. Have you looked at the Game Master screen yet, Alex?
I actually haven't seen a whole lot of it yet, Param.
Okay. Now...
Show us on the screen.
Here it is. Is this it? No. No. No, 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 no. Where are you at? I can't find it. Sorry, I don't have it handy. It's probably in the bag.
No!
It's probably in that bag right there.
What kind of information does it have that you would not expect on a GM screen?
It doesn't have anything you wouldn't expect. Where are you at? Here you is. I found it. But what I was surprised it had that I should have expected... Here it is. With the pawns I couldn't find earlier. And my Starfinder bag. Which I'm going to have to use earlier. Okay, so first, here's the cool swanky art I was talking about.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's really good. That screen is awesome.
Yeah. Also, it's that big, thick board game board, just like the Paizo one. I kind of feel bad for when a game company releases a screen and it's like that thin cardboard stuff that's going to break at your first thing. And on the inside, it's just like the Paizo Pathfinder screen, most of the part. You've got most of it dedicated to the use of skills and the different DCs, etc. Then you have the actions and combat and conditions. So nothing you shouldn't expect there. But I really appreciated that the last panel, instead of dedicating itself to experience and gold rewards and hardness rules that don't exist. Well, the rewards exist, but you know, you can put that not on the GM screen. Instead, it has all the stuff you need for starship combat, including the arc chart, the starship speeds, critical hit locations, that sort of stuff. That's the sort of stuff I would have been constantly going back to that chapter of the book for, and I'm glad it's here.
So hardness does exist, but it's for walls and doors.
Right, which is not... I don't need it for every single possible thing like I do for... Because my players like to blow stuff up a lot in Pathfinder, and at least in Starfinder I can say, well, it's coated in anti-laminate neural fibers, so because they don't want people blowing up their space station.
They have the hardness for polycarbonate plate here. and pure adamantine and transparent aluminum.
They have polycarbonate.
Yeah, it's on the page.
I'm glad that we have the rat people working at PASO.
No, I mean, it's always a thing. In Archangel Aeons games, we have a guy that's so good at sundering like walls. We're getting to the point where we think we can just collapse towers instead of doing counters.
Yeah, I mean, so far I've had to been like, no, you guys can't do that.
No, he's really good, though. But yeah, it can be a problem.
Yeah, a lot of that is sort of like why PCs don't like to build sender builds, because there's sort of a arms truce you make with the GM of, well, we won't do this if you won't do it back at us type situation.
He tried to sunder an artifact that went about as well as it should have.
Well, plus,
I thought that was very fair.
I do too. I thought like how it should have gone.
Yeah.
Now
you tried to sunder the artifact, and the artifact sundered back.
Now we skipped over this so that you could speak on this. James, tell us about the condition cards.
The condition cards are great. I'm not really a fan of the goblin art that they do, except for one. On this one, I don't know how well you'll be able to see it. It's the nauseated condition card. That's just a fishbowl helmet filled with vomit.
That's terrible.
It is one of the greatest pieces of art I've ever seen. The sickened side is the little guy getting, you know, after his party night before he becomes the guy on the back. But that art is so good. It also helps because you are flat-footed for the first round of combat, just like in Pathfinder. But that's a condition in this game rather than a just fact of life in Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm.
So having the cards code it could be is a helpful bit on that, too.
Yeah.
Also, the things that you can debuff other people with. So, like, aid another, like when you make people off target, there's cards for that. Pretty much everything goes over.
They're
good.
It's not just as useful as the Pathfinder equivalent of this, which is super important at the time. It was such a great accessory when they released the condition cards for Pathfinder. I think I've bought 3 sets as I continuously lose them eventually, because you haul these away to conventions and you lose things at conventions.
And the cases are just, you know, thin cardboard.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
But because the conditions in Starfinder are like the Pathfinder conditions almost, it's those little subtle differences that you trip yourself up on a lot. And so these flashcards at the table, especially in my Starfinder Society nights, because we alternate back and forth, Pathfinder, Starfinder, Pathfinder, Starfinder, which is confusing. That's where you're going to trip up and make mistakes, is when you think you're right, but you're just thinking of the Pathfinder version of something slightly different in Starfinder.
Speaking of the Pathfinder version of something, I think the confused card that they do is really well. I'm not sure if it's because I'm just misremembering it and heaping praise on Starfinder unnecessarily. Did the Pathfinder condition card give a percentile die roll for the condition?
Yeah.
Yes.
It did. This one does too. I guess I just never used the one in the box. But I found that really helpful.
Well, the tricky thing in Pathfinder is that sometimes different sources of confusion will actually use a different table. It's very uncommon, but it's like, great, well, this condition, why did you make this a condition if you were going to do this to me? Come on.
Please. Imperial Sword does point out something that I kind of don't like about this condition cards for Starfinder, is they color-coded the Pathfinder versions, whereas they didn't the Starfinder versions. So it's less easy to tell at a glance what category of condition it is.
That's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all kind of the same category. I mean, they're front and back. So, like, mm-hmm. each condition is its opposite usual. I mean, bleeding isn't the opposite of burning, I don't think. But in general, they're pretty good about...
well, they probably did it like that because they're both sources of continual damage.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine. Like, blinded is the opposite of deafened, confused and entangled. I guess confusion is entanglement of the mind. Cowering, panicked, you know.
Yeah. Excellent. And lastly, I just wanted to bring this up because I hated this product until now. I love this product. the initiative book, the combat pad, the Starfinder combat pad. I love this thing, and I made my own initiative solution because I also kind of like the old Pathfinder combat pad, but the new Pathfinder combat pad and this pad made one small change that has made me immensely happy. They took the notes section from the left side of the pad and put it on the right side of the pad and made it bigger and put a grid on it. This means that it's so much easier to take notes over there. I'm not having to reach across my hand and smudge my own work and put my miniature and my initiative counters out of the whack. Just that small correction there. And this is as a right-handed person. If you're a left-handed person, the old ones are better for you. But and it's bigger, and with that grid on it, it makes it real easy for me to just make columns real quick of Monster A's hit points, Monster B's hit points, and just use the initiative combat mat like it's meant to be used. The Pathfinder version also made this change with their new release of it, so it's the same. If you have one, you basically have the other. It, with the small exception that instead of having just the same thing on both sides like the Pathfinder version does, this one on the flip side has the initiative chart in reverse and divided into phases for the starship combat.
I do like that. I mean, I haven't gotten to the point in enough games where I need it to keep track of that many ships, but I'm sure if you run the AP, you get to that point and make some higher level scenario society scenario will do that as well. Scenario content.
Man, oh man, this should we should call this this episode the one where Param makes James buy everything.
Mm.
Param, my wife will be mad.
Aww.
You don't want her to be mad.
She is the greatest human being of them all.
I thought I was already dedicating full time to this, just trying to get you to buy Gundam toys.
Param, it continues. The bankruptcy continues. I am looking forward to more society stuff, too. Seeing how this stuff really plays, I think will... I kind of feel like if you were going to start the adventure path, you should have played to some society first. Mm-hmm. The society scenarios are briefer, they're nice, and I think that understanding of the base game really would help your enjoyment with that. Because I know if I just jumped in the Dead Suns, I would be having some problems, but I'm feeling a lot more confident now.
Plus the society,
and that's good because that's next.
Like the society adventures are really fun because, like, I love the confirmation and the others, but I really like the confirmation because you get to like tour all of Absalom Station and get to know all the leads of the different factions. And Ziggy is totally the best. And it's just
Ziggy's the iguanahead, isn't he?
No, Ziggy is the.
The Sheeran one, the Axe Guardians.
Yes.
Okay. He loves pop music too much.
Yes, he does. He sends you after J-pop music as part of the encounter. As part of the we spoil a little bit. Sorry, but it's awesome. It's amazing and it's fun. And I totally brought music for that section appropriate. Which, I also want to mention another great accessory that we plug every single chance I get a chance to say how awesome it is, and that is Sirenscape has a sci-fi set out there. They've had it for a while now. They've included all the Starfinder stuff, including official Starfinder support, where they tried to make the quote-unquote official sounds of the different races, ray guns, and spaceships. That's awesome. That's out there. I bring a little Bluetooth speaker with me. I hide it underneath my combat pad when I play, and then periodically through the game I get to have, even at PFS night, I get to just like have music and sound effects for all of my role playing.
We had a game where we had another experience with Ziggy there and his music, and RGM decided to do the same thing, and it was very immersive.
Yay!
Very immersive.
What song did your GM choose?
I would have picked something more annoying. It was just played at exactly the volume that makes you want to go, I'm leaving this room.
Oh.
on purpose. It does fit.
I chose Sugar Rush from Wreck-It Ralph soundtrack.
I wouldn't beat you bad of one.
Param clearly didn't want his players to leave.
Yeah. No, they really didn't like it, but it worked.
It's they're supposed to not, I think. I think that's the point. So right. good on you, Param.
I'm out of toys to talk about. You guys out of toys to talk about?
Buy a binder.
Yes. Buy good binders.
Yes, good binders. Good folders. One thing I didn't mention that I do want to mention now that I think about it. The official character sheet. When we reviewed the Pathfinder official character sheet, we kind of found it coming up a little lacking, caused some interesting choices in the arrangement of some of the sheets. We just, at the time, we didn't feel that it was as useful as some of the third-party options that were really popular at the time before it came out. But the official Starfinder sheet is organized beautifully and has a lot of really great reference information on the covers that really help out new players. So I do recommend that.
Are we talking about the character sheet in the core rulebook, or are we talking about the player folio?
The player folio. The player folio $10 character sheet.
I had nothing nice to say about the Pathfinder one when you had me on that episode, but right. Man, oh man, the Starfinder one looks a lot better. And you know, really easy thing they did to make that a billion times better is they took that page that was like, hey, this is where you write your name, and they took it off of the cover and put it onto a page that like the pencil actually works on.
Yeah, that does help when you don't have to have a Sharpie to use it.
Yeah. I mean, like, literally at Pathfinder Society, the joke is, like, everyone's like, oh, well, what's that product you buy? Oh, the player folio? That's just the reroll product.
Yeah, that's just a reroll folder. That's all that is.
Yeah.
Literally, we have a guy who goes, hey, do you need a reroll? And he just pulls out a folio, and it's completely unused, still in the bag. It's like, oh, okay.
There's five of them. Also, we started an AP with somebody using a folio, and halfway through, she went, this is garbage.
Oh. Yeah, that was Anne, wasn't it?
No, it was the other one. Yeah.
Garbage might be a little harsh for it, in my opinion, but I also don't have mine out of the shrink wrap for the Pathfinder side.
Well, she was a spellcaster, and the issue was her equipment, her spells, and everything were on massively different pages.
Mm-hmm. She had to spend like a good 30 seconds flipping pages in order to find what she wanted every single time. Mm-hmm. And she got to the point where she was just like, "Arr!" And we were all looking at the table like, wait, we didn't realize you were actually using that as intended. We're so sorry.
Mythweavers, for free, provide soft Starfinder sheets now, which are nice, mm-hmm. and just like two pages, like boom, boom, boom. Like, they're cool, they're simple. Mythweavers is great.
Yeah.
Now, here's just hoping that all of your data doesn't go missing again.
Yeah, I mean, you can download it to PDF, which is what I've learned as a backup, but they've kind of learned how to back up their system now, so...
Hey, that's good. Yeah, the last time they crashed hard, James hadn't backed up any of his, like, 24 characters.
Oh, my God. It was... a soul.
That's painful, soul. Man. That's very painful.
There was one point where James came to Reign of Winter. He's like, I have this power. I can't prove it. My sheet is garbage now.
Yeah, it's like I just wrote it on a napkin. I'm like, you're going to have to believe me, GM.
Now...
But Robin, in her greatness, was like, ye are forgiven.
And then I went to heaven.
Now, you might have died.
I probably died. Sorry, what's up?
We're coming up on time, so I was wanting to know, is there anything you guys want to shout out that's not related to Starfinder and Pretty Pretty Toys to play it with?
We have Unseelie Court next week!
We have Unseelie Court next week!
Yay!
You
should come to our convention. It's in, if you are around, it is in University City, which is like just off of Center City, Philadelphia. We're doing a convention where you can come and you can earn rewards and prizes and you can game with people, and it'll be great. It'll be so much fun. We're doing Starfinder and Pathfinder. I think Tom is even playing in Unleashing the Untouchable, isn't he?
Yeah, there's some slots going off of the Unleashing the Untouchable, which is a secret tier scenario. There's two specials scheduled to go off. One on Friday night and one on Saturday morning or Sunday morning, I believe. It looks like it's going to be over 15 tables. It's on the weekend of the 13th to the 15th.
I'm so excited to play Marcellus in Assault on Absalom. He's the silliest character.
Yeah, you can find it on Warhorn under Unseelie Court. Also on their conventions pages. It probably should be up front there. Also, get you some boons.
Boons! I don't even know what the race boon is for Pathfinder this quarter. I hope it's a race boon. What if it's not a race boon?
I bet you it'll be a Naiad if I had to guess.
Oh, man. They should, I don't even know what they should do. I was going to say they should cheapen Rogueru and do Rogueru, but man, that just came out.
I want to see more Starfinder boons. From Gen Con, I got two, and they were based around getting new weapons, I guess because my Pop Idol's sponsors are a bunch of arms dealers, which is shady, but fine.
Well, like, you know how in RE Creators, like, Magic Slayer Mamako is on everything?
Yeah.
Just Hisuka Mare is just on all the weapons. Like, instead of having shark decals, it's her.
I mean, that is pretty cool. That's kind of how I was thinking it. But I want to see what all the other ones are, so we should probably get a chance.
She goes, nuclear fire! And then the torpedo comes out, and, like, as it's rushing towards its target, spiraling around, it's just, like, it's got streamers for her.
Anything else to shout out? Any projects, Alex?
My Starfarer skill guide got pushed back to January because Rogue Genius Games is running a Mutants and Masterminds Kickstarter this month? Week? I don't know. It's only 15 days long. Jacob Blackman is doing his Mutants and Masterminds Superpowered Legends series. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's not Starfinder related, but if you're into superheroes and you like seeing more Jacob's artwork, you can go to his Kickstarter and pledge him $1 or $25, I think, for the PDF or something like that. It would be super helpful and great, and he'll get to flesh out all of those crazy superhero epoxies. It's awesome. I'm really excited. One of his stretch goals is, like, ancient Egyptian gods. I'm like, oh, what are you going to do with ancient Egyptian gods? I don't even think they were in DC or Marvel, but I could be wrong. I really don't.
They were in Yu-Gi-Oh.
They were in Yu-Gi-Oh! They just need to get Maximilian Pegasus. He's the real bad guy in Jacob's setting. It's great. Let me think. What else is going on? We mentioned James and I just finished Eyes of the Ten, so that was going on. That was really cool. Shout out to all the people who worked hard making that scenario, like, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. You done good. I can say with pride, Eric Mona, if you're listening, your scenario has stood the test of time and almost murdered modern characters with modern power options. Actually, I think I died twice. I got Breath of Life, so I got better. Breath of Life, man. So, like, we didn't have any deaths that actually required Raise Dead. We had an all-star lineup of players who really knew the game, and we had a really strong, diverse group of characters. Especially after we got hit hard in part one, and we brought our A game every scenario after that.
Yeah. Any shout-outs for you, Pam?
I want to shout out to Fat Dragon Games' Kickstarter they're running right now for their new 3D printable terrain. Their last two sets were amazing. They always over-deliver and deliver ahead of deadline. So there's probably a lot of trust to throw in on these guys when they do their work. Again, disclaimer, I used to work for the company, but I haven't in over 8 years. But what's cool about this one, especially for our show, is their new set includes a ton of sci-fi terrain, and a lot of it is built so that you can put LED kits in it, and it will glow and strobe and pulse.
So that means we could bring it to the confirmation and have Bug Venture Captain dance with his Chapok pop to pulse strobe, right?
Oh, this is so going to happen now.
I mean, isn't the other, the Vesk iconic, isn't she a big fan of the same music? What are they going to...
Oh, no, that's the soldier.
The soldier, yeah, the Vesk.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. Oh, you did say Vesk, okay, mm-hmm. My bad. Right, for some reason, I thought you said Sheeran. You said
now, so we're just waiting for the love triangle between Historia 2, Ziggy, and Obaziah? Is that her name?
Obaziah.
I can't wait for that.
We need it, man. We need it.
I need that slash fic.
Yeah.
All right, now
Hillman, make it happen. Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at nodirection@hotmail.com. You can come to our website at nodirectionpodcast.com. You can reach us at Facebook at facebook.com/nodirection. And, of course, catch us on Twitch at twitch.tv/nodirection. Also, all of our shows are available on YouTube at youtube.com/nodirectionshow. And until
that
next...
That reminds me.
Oh
no! Wait, no. We have our crazy Starfinder blog content.
Oh yes, man! Things have been going crazy on the blogs for Starfinder content. Alex has been basically fighting with the entire internet using math. He's been basically theory crafting a lot of the different classes and different options and showing how things actually fold out when you start to crunch the numbers. And Luis Loza brought in a starship, a hauler, like a what I'm calling the space U-Haul.
Encounter.
Yes.
Or ship.
Yep. Yeah. For he did it for Starfleet Design, borrowing your title for to post up. And it looks sweet.
I think we're all just going to be super lazy, and anytime anybody wants to design or like do something mathematical for Starfinder, everyone will just use that title. It'll be like the crowdsourced article title. Because it's just so good. Like, I'm sorry. It's got like so much heritage in that one title. You can't say no to Starfleet Design. It's like, okay.
No, we can't. Gotcha. If Paramount's lawyers come and knock him, though.
If they do come a knocking, I don't even know what we'll do. We'll change it to Star Armada. Oh, we might change it now. It'll be Star Armada design. It's Armada and Star. It's I can't remember what the name of the word is where you take two words and you combine them together at the point. Like, there's a special term for it. Regardless, Star Armada design. It'll be great.
All right, guys. With that, I think we are going to wrap up. Thank you all for coming. We hope to see you guys again in 2 weeks for our next episode. And we hope it's a special one. So,
better be.
Until next time, go beyond with no direction.